Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation
with Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 8 minutes after 11 p.m. here on a Saturday. It's April 29th, 2017. This is program 175 in the WGN Radio Theater series. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious, very effervescent, very smiley and dimply, Lisa Wolf, my co-host. What's up, Lisa?
Hi, Carl. Somebody's got a smile around here.
You are very smiley.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
You were called this by many people before, and I call you this.
Call what?
The woman with a smile in her voice.
That's true. I'm going to take
she
that.
She really does, right,
it.
Lisa Graham is our producer tonight.
Yay.
And tomorrow night as well, right, Lisa?
Yes. Glad to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Yep, indeed. It's a little rainy out there tonight, so we have some classic radio shows. Don't go out, stay in, enjoy The Adventures of Philip Marlowe from 1948, Good Detective Adventure. Then it's the Charlie McCarthy Show with Edgar Bergen, Charlie McCarthy, and their special guest, Hedy Lamarr. And then The Lives of Harry Lime, starring Orson Welles, all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum, 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 dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop. Brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV series, A Series of Unfortunate Events, and an adaptation of Lemony Snicket's book series.
Lemony Snicket?
Lemony Snicket.
All right, what do they win?
They will win a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, best Chicago pizza.
I had Lou Malnati's today for dinner.
Well, I bet you didn't have a $25 gift certificate, though.
No, I paid for it.
I bet you did.
Yeah. All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. She's John's sister, and she played Rosalie Mullins in 2003's School of Rock.
You know, this is the first time any teacher has ever asked me to do anything outside of school.
Right. Who is that? Great Chicago actress.
I love her in School of Rock.
312-981-7200. Give us a call. We'll find our winner after these words.
All right, and welcome back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it one more time.
You know, this is the first time any teacher has ever asked me to do anything outside of school.
All right.
That makes me smile. We have Bill on the line from Stockton. Hey, Bill.
Good morning, guys.
How are you?
Very good. How are you?
It's still nighttime, but it'll be morning soon.
Yeah, that's right.
Bill,
that's correct.
Who is that fine actress?
My wife and I just watched one of her brother's movies. I believe that's Joan Cusack.
That is exactly right. Joan Cusack is the right answer. And you know what you've won? A $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my personal favorite pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnati's.com. And thank you so much for calling in. Good way to start off the show.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill.
All right, it is time for our first classic radio show. It's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. This was really one of the best detective shows on the air. In fact, it had the largest listening audience of any radio show for a few years. It was beating Jack Benny and all the other radio shows. It was a detective created by Raymond Chandler. And his first novel was The Big Sleep. And then Chandler did six other novels, all of which had this detective, Philip Marlowe, so very popular detective. In the films, Marlowe was played by Dick Powell, Robert Montgomery, Humphrey Bogart, James Gardner, Bob Mitchum. It premiered on radio in 1947, starring Van Heflin, as heard on NBC. But then, in 1948, Gerald Moore took over the role, and he really made it his own. By 1949, as I say, it was one of the most popular shows on radio, beating other radio shows. Norman McDonald was the creator of Gunsmoke. He was the producer-director, did make a transition to television that starred Philip Carey from 1959 through 1960. But we have a radio episode for you now that stars Gerald Moore. It's called The Persian Slippers. It's from October 3rd, 1948. Here's part one of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
I felt low, very low, the night I set out searching for the girl with the strange hazel eyes. The fog which hung over Los Angeles didn't help, and I felt even worse when I found her. For by then I had death on my hands.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. And now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's gripping story, The Persian Slippers.
One of those thin, chilly fogs had sneaked in from the Pacific and had hung vaguely to the streetlights along the Sunset Strip. It was a kind of a fog that you could see through, but everything was out of focus. It made you start wondering what you were going to do when you were 90 and you were all alone. I'd have liked to have spent the night in a room full of noisy extroverts playing charades. But instead, I had to eat a quick dinner and drive up into the secluded Hollywood Hills to meet a guy. A guy who had nothing but trouble on his mind. When I pushed the buzzer, I had the feeling of wishing I was someplace else. Carl Delaney himself opened the door. He was grim and brusque and to the point.
Marlowe?
That's right.
Come in, Marlowe. I appreciate this. You're coming up here after business hours, I mean. I wouldn't have asked, except, well, perhaps I waited too long as it is. Sit down.
Thanks. Waited too long for what, Mr. Delaney?
36 hours ago, my wife disappeared. Marlowe, you've got to find her for me. Find her just as fast as you can.
Wait a minute. Disappeared, you said? Would you mind playing that part back a little slower?
Norma simply walked out that door, got in her car, and drove off to get hold of herself, as she always does when we've quarreled. And always before, she's come back in an hour or so. This time
she simply didn't come back, is that it? Look, Mr. Delaney, I could...
You'd better let me finish before you do anything. Lately, my wife has been brooding over something serious that she refused to discuss. I've caught her crying several times, and she's not a woman given to tears. Marlowe, I'm sure that unless we move fast, when we do find her, we're going to find her dead.
Suicide?
Yeah.
With his thick, blunt hand, Delaney reached for a color portrait lying face down on the table and gave it to me. I looked and saw the face of a dream. A beautiful dream with strange hazel eyes and soft black hair. I felt Delaney watching me as I glanced up in time to catch the fading end of a very ugly expression on his face. I handed the picture back to him and he laid it on the table again, face down. Then he took me upstairs to Norma's room. It was a nice, frilly room, typically haunted by elusive sweet smells. There was only one incongruous note. What was the horoscope doing on her desk? From the looks of her picture, I knew that Norma was attractive enough that she didn't need to look to the stars for her future. A horoscope?
Yeah, you know how women are. Marlowe, will you find her for me?
Well, I'll try. My rate is $25 a day plus expenses. And remember, you hired me to find her, not bring her back.
Fair enough. You just find her. I'll be satisfied.
I'll need a starting point. Were there any phone calls or letters or anything that might be a lead? What about friends?
We have no close friends. Norma always stayed to herself. Wait, there was a phone call yesterday from Madame Jeanette, I think it was.
Who's that, a dressmaker?
I haven't any idea. She wanted to speak to Mrs. Delaney. I told her Norma was out, and she asked that my wife call her when she got back. That's all there was to it.
Anything else you can tell me?
No. No, it's not much to go on.
I'll see what I can do, Mr. Delaney.
I'll be here all night, Marlowe. Call me if you need anything.
I'll do that. Good night. I drove back through the persistent fog to Sunset Boulevard. It was 9:30. I knew it was going to be like tracking a hummingbird through the petrified forest by the bent twigs, but I got a classified directory and I started digging. I checked the hairdressers, the manicurists, and the milliners, and I was just about to start on the interior decorators when I remembered the horoscope on Norma's desk. I quickly turned to the personal consultants. Yeah, there it was. Madame Jeanette. Her establishment, located in a dubious neighborhood south of Olvera Street, turned out to be a tacky cottage set back next to an alley. It was as dark inside as out. I was pounding on the door like a vampire at sunrise when a newsboy came up the path.
Looking for Madame Jeanette?
Yeah, you know her?
Sure, she tells fortunes. Says I've got a great career line. You want to see it?
Not right now, thanks. And I'll say for her that she's a sound sleeper.
Maybe, but not so early as this. About this time, she's always hanging around that bar on the corner. Tonight, she's throwing a farewell party in there.
Farewell party? Who for?
Herself. She's leaving town.
Oh, thanks a lot. Here, kid.
Gee, a buck. My old man will swear I've been shooting crap again.
Give me another one, Charlie. Not every night I say goodbye to my dear old neighborhood.
Muscatel again, Jeanette?
Yeah. Did I say dear old neighborhood, Charlie?
I think you did, Jeanette.
Must have had one too many then. Because of all the low, flea-bitten row of shacks I ever lived in, this is the new low.
Aw, Jeanette, that's no way to talk. You hurt my feelings.
Pinky. There ain't nothing like a little beer to soothe hurt feelings.
Yeah, you said it. Jeanette, can I have another?
Yeah. Charlie, give Pinky another. Now, this is his last.
The last? I thought you said it was a farewell party. Hey, you with all your dough.
This dough's to get me out of this rat trap of a town, see? It's the last I want to see out of it in all my life, see?
Yeah,
another
we
see. Another muscatel, Charlie.
Hold on a minute, Jeanette. Hey, what'll it be, mister?
Something just a bit drier than muscatel. Say, Scotch?
It's on me, mister. It's my party.
Well, well, this is indeed a pleasure. You're the Madame Jeanette, aren't you?
Yeah, why?
You're all of 20 years younger than what I expected.
Probably the life I lead. Hey, wait a minute. Why should you be expecting anything about me? I don't know you.
Perhaps not, but I know you.
From where?
Oh, you're more famous than you think. Your reputation has spread far beyond Olvera Street. In fact, it's gone up as far as the Sunset Strip, Madame Jeanette.
No kidding.
How would you kid a fortune teller? Don't you know all, see all, and tell all?
Well...
And judging from that Spanish shawl, your Hungarian skirt, and those embroidered Persian slippers, I'm beginning to think your fame is not only local, but international.
Say, you're beginning to make me feel like I shouldn't be giving up this racket after all.
Giving up fortune-telling? No.
Yeah. I'm leaving town on the midnight train. Gonna spread my talents all over the East, and I'm not coming back.
Don't tell me your crystal ball has laid a golden egg.
So to speak, yeah. I come into some lettuce. Suddenly.
That's always nice. Well, I guess it means you won't be interested in the few paltry dollars I'd intended to spend with you.
Hey, can I have another beer, Jim?
Shut up, Pinky Blow!
Ah, just a...
Traveling lady can always use a little extra moolah. What was it you wanted, bud?
I'm looking for someone. Norma Delaney.
Norma De... I'm afraid I don't know anybody by that name.
I'm afraid you do.
What's your angle? Who are you, anyway?
I'm Philip Marlowe, private detective.
Some private dick you must be to have to resort to fortune tellers.
Come on, Jeanette, look into your crystal muscatel, see if you can spot Norma Delaney.
I told you once. I don't know the name. Now blow.
Just a minute, Doc Eyes.
Hey, Charlie.
Yeah?
This bird's crabbing my party. What kind of a joint is this, anyway? Lady can't sit here and have a farewell party without being insulted by every jerk that drops in.
Well, mister.
I haven't finished my drink yet.
You got pockets, ain't you? Just pour the drink into one of them and take it along. You ain't finishing it here.
Charlie reached under the bar for his pick handle, so I left without pursuing the subject further. But I knew Jeanette was lying, writing a purple lipstick about Norma. I walked back to my car, lit a cigarette, and spent a few precious minutes trying to decide whether or not to break into her place and snoop. Then I caught the shadow of a figure slipping up on me from behind. I turned.
Wait, don't swing, Mac, don't swing. It's only me, Pinky. I was in the bar when you was talking to the madam. Tightwad, Jeanette.
Yeah, I saw you, so?
She did something the minute you left. I figured you might like to know what it was.
It all depends.
Well, I thought it might be worth something to you, like a saw, maybe.
Come on, you! No! Spill it!
Wait a minute!
Spill
wait.
If it's any good at all, it's worth a fiver, no more.
All right. She made a phone call.
Who to? What'd she say?
Nothing. Just some swear words in Spanish. The line was busy. But I kept my eyes open and I got the number.
All right, let's have it, if you can still remember it.
Oh, I can remember easy. 5 or 1st, huh?
Here.
Thanks. The number was Crenshaw, 1929. But you get it? Like the year of the big crash.
Thanks to the thirst of an underweight lush, I wasn't at the end of my rope yet. I drove as far as the nearest drugstore, dropped a nickel in the slot, and dialed. Crenshaw, the year of the big crash.
Hello?
Hello, let me speak to Norman Delaney, please.
I'm afraid you must have the wrong number.
Look, you, I'm trying to locate Mrs. Delaney. I suggest you help me.
How did you get this number?
From a client, Mr. Carl Delaney.
But that's impossible.
Let's stop sparring. We can save each other a lot of wear and tear if we get together and talk this over.
Maybe you're right. Yes, that sounds sensible. I'm at the Beechwood Apartments, number 4.
Check. I'll be right out. Mr. Pierre Gillum, it says here on the door.
Yes. Are you the man who called?
Uh-huh. Philip Marlowe.
Come in, won't you? You said you were looking for Norma Delaney, Mr. Marlowe. Tell me, what's wrong? Has anything happened to her?
Well, her husband seems to think she might have killed herself, but I have a hunch that you might have something interesting to say.
No, poor kid. Poor Norma. Well, I'll tell you what I can, Marlowe, but it isn't much.
Oh, I'm all ears, and I'll sit, thanks.
Well, I was in love with Norma once, briefly, a long time ago. She was a wonderful girl, but her husband was insanely jealous.
Mm-hmm.
Even though she hadn't loved him for years, he refused to give her up. He even threatened to kill her first.
Oh?
Norma and I realized that serious trouble lay ahead, so we parted. Good friends. And I haven't seen her or heard from her in months.
I buy it all but the last line. You have seen or heard from her, and recently...
I'm not going to argue that. I've told you the truth. You can take it or leave it.
I leave it.
I suppose we both put our cards on the table. You lied to me when you said Carl Delaney gave you my number. I know because Madame Jeanette called me shortly after you did.
Touché. But why did she run to call you at the mention of Norma's name if you two broke up months ago? And incidentally, how did that ersatz oracle Jeanette get mixed up in this in the first place?
That is a long story, Marlowe.
Good, I like long stories. I'll bet it begins just for a lark. Norma and I went down to Olvera Street once to have our palms read.
Yes, that's exactly how it started. Madame Jeanette was an unusual woman, a character, you might say.
Uh-huh.
Well, we became friendly with her. Norma got quite sentimental about her. One day we made a sort of pact. If ever either of us was in trouble and needed the other, we'd go to Madame Jeanette or get a message to her. She would notify the other. And...
So when I walked in asking for Norma, the madam assumed she was in trouble.
Right, right. Called me immediately because she herself is leaving town in less than an hour.
I know. Well, Mr. Gillum, it's all very interesting, but it's getting me no place. Thanks. If I need you
again...
Oh,
no, wait, Marlowe, don't go.
Hmm?
I know a lot of details about Norma that I'm sure will be helpful. For instance, she drives a Nash coupe, a powder blue.
Powder blue coupe, huh? Thanks, that'll help.
Oh, and she has a fondness for white gloves. Wears them quite often.
I see. Well, I better get moving.
No, wait just a minute, Marlowe.
I've got to go.
Now, listen, Marlowe.
I told you I was in a hurry.
Now, take it easy. Stick around a while.
Get away from that door.
Look, just who do you think you are? Come busting in here, prying, asking questions, you dirty...
Ooh! You asked for it, Gillum. Ooh! You got a left, too, huh? So have I, brother. Gillum sprawled all over his coffee table, as limp as a 5-cent salad. Outside, I glanced at my watch. Madame Jeanette's train left in 40 minutes. I ran through $22 worth of red lights getting down to a cottage because I was sure Gillum's attempted stall was tied in with the departure, but I couldn't figure out why. That is, I couldn't until I switched out my lights and coasted to a stop in front of her place. Then I saw it. Half hidden in the shadows back of the house sat a powder blue coupe. I got up on the porch close to the front door and listened. Jeanette was talking to a woman. I couldn't catch what they were saying, but one thing was certain. The woman was Norma Delaney. All at once I realized the talk had stopped. That was my cue. I shoved open the door and went in. Jeanette sat at a table alone, facing me.
Well, Mr. Marlowe, you've returned. What is it this time?
I'd like my fortune told.
Yeah? Now listen close, Gumshoe. I'll make this a short and snappy reading because I'm catching a train in 15 minutes. There's a woman very close to you. In fact, she's right behind you, sucker!
What? Oh!
That woman's no nonsense.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Right? She just clocked him.
That's right.
And you know, when he punched that other guy and knocked him out, he said he was as limp as a 5-cent salad.
That's pretty limp.
That's pretty. I could just, you know, that's when you get that bad salad and it's all rubbery like that.
After the dressing's been on for too long, and you go back to it, it's no good anymore.
All right, when we come back from the news and after these commercials, we're going to have the conclusion to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Then a little later, it's the Charlie McCarthy Show and the Lives of Harry Lime. But first, these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, this is the WGN Radio Theater. Every Saturday and Sunday, you can catch Lisa and I here presenting your favorite classic radio shows. 11 p.m. until 2 o'clock in the morning. We're here 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday. That's 6 hours last time I checked.
You finally got this right. Two years into it, and I think he's got it.
I brought my abacus. It's right here. I did it before the show. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have all the latest technology. I have a typewriter, an abacus. I have a horse and buggy that takes me here.
Phonographs are back in style. So yeah. What's old is new again.
Lisa has a Bentley, convertible Bentley, and she has a driver. I have a horse and buggy that bring me here on. Well, and I still beat her here.
If you're nice, I'll
studio.
Pick you up.
I was
sometime.
Here about an hour earlier than Lisa.
Well, then you got here an hour too
I was
early.
Sleeping in my car. She gets here. And she's like, I don't want to go in by myself.
I did
so
not
can
say
you stay
that.
In your car? So
I
I'm
did
like, yeah,
not
I'll take a
that.
Nap. So I was taking a nap
okay.
in my car.
That's not my personality. Let's just be clear.
Yeah. Okay, so okay. That's not true. I wasn't sleeping in my car.
Oh, that
waiting
part
for
was.
You?
Okay. I just never said to you, I didn't want her don't want to go
Lisa,
by myself.
I didn't want her to walk in alone
you
at night
to carry her
in
umbrella,
the rain.
Right?
So I was like, you know. A knight in shining armor.
Well, that's what you are.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to The Adventures of Philip Marlowe.
When I finally opened my eyes again, nothing changed. It took me a long time to figure out that the lights were off and it was dark. I climbed up the table leg hand over hand and switched on a lamp. Jeanette's house was absolutely quiet. I had caught a glimpse of a white glove holding what is known as a blunt instrument just before I dozed off. And that reminded me what I was down here for. I wobbled through the kitchen and out the back door, but the powder blue coupe was gone. It was 12:15. My head and the fog both had gotten a little thicker. So I just stood there, useful like a ping-pong ball in a bowling alley. It was the sound of footsteps that finally moved me in. The newsboy was back.
Well, hiya again, mister. Did you ever get a hold of Madame Jeanette before she left?
Yeah, but not tight enough. Say, a blue coupe left here a few minutes ago. Did you see it?
Nope, I didn't. Gee, I'm sure sorry she went away. She gave me a buck tonight, too. Said she was coming into a fortune.
You and your career line... Say, what's that down there, in those weeds?
I don't know. It looks like some kind of a shoe. Yeah. Yeah, it is a shoe. Yeah, see?
What do you know? A Persian slipper. I took the slipper along as a souvenir for my scrapbook and walked back to my car, trying to fit Norma Delaney's lovely hazel eyes in with that crack on the skull. But I couldn't. Between throbs of my headache, I figured Pierre Gillum would know why Norma had dropped in on the madam so close to train time. I decided to go back and ask him. Gillum was as reliable as a two-headed quarter and just as tricky. So when I got to his apartment, I pushed the buzzer, stepped back, and braced myself. There was no fight left in him. He opened the door in his robe, fingered the mouse I had given him, and grinned.
Oh? So you found your way out by yourself.
Uh-huh. Say, Gillum, what was so important about Norma seeing Madame Jeanette just before a train left?
I don't know.
You knew enough to try to keep me here, to delay me, why?
Oh, Marlowe, I did that for old time's sake, for an old friend. Jeanette asked me to hold you here until midnight, and I tried my best. Obviously wasn't good enough. Well, that's all I know about it.
I see your phone is off the hook. You know that?
Yeah, I took it off. It's given me nothing but trouble tonight. I hereby wash my hands of this whole business. I'm going to bed. And I hope to sleep. Good night.
I envied him and left to call my client, Carl Delaney. He said he'd be in all night, but the phone kept ringing and ringing and no one answered. I suddenly got a very creepy feeling. 20 minutes later, I pulled to a stop at that small but elegant house. The lights were on and I saw the powder blue coupe in the garage next to Carl's big black sedan. I ran up the steps. The front door was ajar, so I went in. I found Carl Delaney in front of the fireplace, face down on the floor, dead. There was a handbag on a chair. I opened it, compact cigarettes, and a key to room 340 in the Bradford Arms Hotel. No identification. That color portrait of Norma was standing up on the table this time. And those searching hazel eyes seemed to follow me all the way to the telephone.
Lieutenant Ibarra speaking.
Bill Marlowe, Ibarra. There's a dead one at 1077 Hollycrest Road. Named Carl Delaney. Murdered.
I'll be right out.
I hung up the phone and then the hair on my neck crawled as I heard the unmistakable sound of a woman's heels on the floor upstairs. I ducked behind a door as the heels clicked down the steps. And then she entered the room. Norma Delaney was lovely. As lovely as a picture. She moved calmly and deliberately, put a note on the table, picked up the handbag, and then turned to face the door I was hiding behind.
You can come out now, Mr. Marlowe.
Hello, Mrs. Delaney.
You can call me Norma now. And if you're thinking of using your gun, perhaps you'll be good enough to read this note first. Here.
To whom it may concern, I, Norma Delaney, purposely and with premeditation, shot and killed my husband, Carl. It is beyond me to express how deeply I hated him, and since I must pay for this and cannot endure a public spectacle, I shall take my own life within the next few minutes. Now look, Norma, no guns.
Easy, Marlowe. I'll kill you if necessary. But it would be so pointless now. I'm free at last, and I want to spend the little time left to me in my own way.
Norma, if you'll listen to me,
just
a minute.
Tonight I made my only friend, Madame Jeanette, happy. And I killed a man who needed killing. Something good, something bad. So I'm quitting, even out.
What do you propose to do with me?
You mustn't try to stop me, Marlowe. See that closet?
Mm-hmm.
Get inside. And careful how you move your hands. Turn around to the wall. That's it. Marlowe, I'm sorry I had to hit you at Jeanette's tonight. Goodbye.
It took 3 shots to smash the lock on that closet door. I heard her driving away just as I got it open. In spite of what she'd said, I couldn't let her kill herself. I ran outside to my car. One glance under the hood was all it took. There was nothing left of the wiring but loose ends. I ran into the street and a miracle happened. The first time in my life, a taxi in Los Angeles when I wanted it.
I'm sorry, fella. I'm gonna call.
Skip it. This is an emergency.
Hey, wait a minute. You
police
can't...
business. A girl is driving up the road in a blue coupe. We gotta catch her before she kills herself. Let's go.
I think I saw taillights just then.
Yeah? Can't you go any faster?
Not on these curves, brother. I got a wife and kids.
Okay, fella. We'll be at the top of the hill when we can get around the next bend. We should spot her then.
Yeah. You can see the whole road down the other side. Here we are, mister. This is the top.
But I don't see her. Where is she? Hey, wait a minute. Stop here. Turn off your motor. This is haywire.
I don't get it. We were gaining on her and now... she just disappears. Hey, what's that?
Motor. That side road we passed. That's it.
Hey, look. Look!
smoke.
We both saw the awful sight for just an instant. A powder blue coupe with a woman crouched over the wheel. It shot out of that side road, crashed through the guardrail, and fell end over end down into the gorge. By the time we got to the hole in the fence, the wreck was an inferno.
No, no use trying to get down there. The whole hillside will be on fire in another minute.
I guess she pulled over here into the side road and waited for us to go by. And we did.
Yeah, it's sandy here, too. It's a wonder she didn't get stuck. What's the matter?
There's something buried here in the sand. One of her tires ran over it.
What is it?
Why, it's plenty, brother. Come on, turn that hack of yours around. Let's get off this mountain. I just found the answer to a lot of questions.
You, Marlowe?
Yeah, Lieutenant.
We found the body and the wife's suicide note. Then one of the boys spotted that fire up on the hill. What is it?
Car went off the road.
An accident? Or the suicide?
Just a little of both, Ibarra, but we'll talk later. Right now, we gotta go to the Bradford Arms Hotel on the double. And please, no siren. The Bradford Arms was a three-story walk-up. When we got there, Ibarra stationed one man in front, sent another to cover the back, and we started up the stairs. We had reached the second floor when we saw him on the landing above. Gillum. He spotted us at the same time and turned back fast.
There, Marlowe. Who's that?
That's our boy, Ibarra. Here, Gillum, let's go.
There he goes. He's heading for the fire escape.
Second Lieutenant, he's all yours. I got business the other way.
Hey, you stop or I shoot!
Room 336, 38, 340. It's all over now. You better drop the gun. Please, it's been neat so far. Don't mess it up. Come on, beautiful. Drop it. It's better.
Well, Marlowe, I got him. I had to wing him to bring him down, but here he is. And the lady must be...
Yes, Lieutenant. The lady is Norma Delaney. A girl who wanted to kill her jealous husband and then commit suicide, but didn't want to die doing it. So she used someone else's body, Madame Jeanette's, which was a logical choice because Jeanette was blackmailing her. Thus, two vultures with one stone, leaving two lovebirds free to fly away together. Right, Norma? Didn't you give Madame Jeanette money so she'd leave town and tell everybody she was going away?
Yes, I did.
That way, the body wouldn't be missed, huh?
Yeah. Isn't it pretty?
Oh, lay off, Marlowe, can't you?
Okay, Gillum, okay. Ellie Barra, I've got a sour taste in my mouth. I think I'll go home and gargle. Anything else you need?
No, I guess not, Phil. I've had all that's necessary. Wait. Just one thing. How'd you get inside this setup? How do you find out it was the dead Madame Jeanette who went over the cliff instead of the very much alive Mrs. Delaney here?
Well, Jeanette had on a pair of Persian slippers, Lieutenant. One fell off down at her cottage where Norma murdered her and put her in the trunk of the car. The other one fell off in the sand of that side road when she took Jeanette out of the trunk and propped her up behind the wheel. It was lucky, Barra. Just dumb luck. I took a walk later. A long walk. All by myself. Through that thin, empty fog in the dark, empty streets. A pair of hazel eyes and a pair of Persian slippers went round and round in my head. And for some reason, I kept thinking, a pair of Persian slippers has two soles and two heels. And it's hard to tell just exactly where the one becomes the other.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald. In tonight's story, The Persian Slippers, Virginia Gregg was heard as Madame Jeanette, with Larry Dobkin as Pierre Gillum and Louis Van Ruten as Carl Delaney. The additional players were Gene Bates as Norma Delaney, Gil Stratton Jr. as the newsboy, Frank Richards as the barkeep, and Tony Barrett as Pinky. Detective Lieutenant Ibarra was played by Jeff Corey. The special music was conceived and conducted by Ivan Dittmars. Be sure to be with us again next week at this same time when Philip Marlowe says...
Sounded good, real good. A week ended Malibu, expenses paid with a cash bonus thrown in. But that was before I knew about the henchman, the redhead, and the corpse. These three and a white Panama hat ruined it all for me.
Mystery, drama, comedy, excitement tonight over most of these CBS stations. And next Sunday, the first broadcast in the new season for two of radio's greatest stars, Amos and Andy. Yes, Sunday nights are great on CBS. Check your local newspapers for program times. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
One of the best detective shows of the golden age of radio, The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Broadcast date of October 3rd, 1948, with The Persian Slippers, starring deep-voiced Gerald Moore, also in the cast Louis Van Ruten, Virginia Gregg. Virginia Gregg, Lisa, was the voice of Norma Bates in the Psycho movies. Did you know that? You know that voice?
Only because we've talked about that before.
Yeah, Virginia Gregg. And then Lawrence Dobkin, Gene Bates, a great cast in this, as heard on CBS. That's The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. Hope you enjoyed that. Hey, folks, I want to remind you, we have a phone number that you can text us on. It's 312-981-7200. Feel free to text us. We read all the texts. We try to get back to everybody. We also have a Twitter, right, Lisa?
Right.
Whatever that is.
Mm-hmm.
What's a Twitter?
Yeah.
I have a vaccine for that or anything.
No,
right?
No, that's a good thing. But the best
way... You
can't
catch a Twitter, can you, Lisa?
I don't know. I think the best way to get a hold of us is Facebook page, WGN
Radio Facebook,
Theater.
Facebook, right.
We post our schedule there, and we have pictures of the stars in these radio shows.
Right.
And we post, all sorts of goodies as we go along the night.
Yeah, there's a great picture of Gerald Moore up. Mm-hmm. And then we have a really great picture of Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy, and then a cool shot of Orson Welles. Because we'll be tuning into the lives of Harry Lime. All this is coming your way here on the WGN Radio Theater. Let's take a quick break, then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Before Mr. Curtis...
interrupted you.
Interrupted me. He can interrupt me anytime he wants
to.
He is way, way too important. He can interrupt me. In fact, I'm honored to be interrupted
by Bill Curtis.
I agree.
I'm feeling good about him.
Love Bill Curtis.
You interrupt so much, you should know how it feels.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is Lisa was so excited. I was driving down here and talking to her on the phone, and she told me that her newest fixture that she bought from Idlewood Electric came. It's a big box. It's just sitting in her,
right by my front door.
Yeah, by your front door, okay.
So, I buy all my fixtures there, not only because they have the most amazing products and lighting, but it's all about how they make you feel when you go in there. It's a whole team. It's a family-owned business. They've been in business for over 60 years. They have three locations, Highland Park, Barrington, and Chicago. And they just want you to leave happy. And that's the true... that's the true feel of Idlewood Electric.
I can't wait until I can get out of the garage I live in and get a place and then have to buy some fixtures.
Well, go to Idlewood Electric. Go to idlewoodelectric.com. Check it out. And they really have a wonderful support
team. They must love you there
team.
Because Lisa lives in a mansion. And so they have, had to buy how many lights? Probably 100 lights.
Hundreds. There's the west wing and the north wing and the east wing.
I only thought it was 100. You're saying it's hundreds?
Hundreds.
They must love you over at Idlewood.
Of course they do. But here's the thing. I posted a few pictures on our Facebook page. I've got my kitchen fixture and my bathroom fixtures.
Wow.
And my newest fixture, which is yet to be hung. So I hope that you'll check out Idlewood
Electric.
Well, this
one is the mother load.
This is it.
Yeah, the coup de grace.
But here's the good news.
Let me just say this. That thing has a lot of sharp points on it.
I think it has 55 lights or something on it. 50 some odd lights.
Make sure that they secure that puppy, really.
We don't want it to fall.
No, we don't want to be walking.
No, we've got a good electrician coming. Here's the thing.
I don't want to have to find a new co-host.
No, you won't. Idlewood is having a sale. It starts May 5th. It runs through May 13th. If you go in there now before the sale and mention WGN, they will give you their rock bottom sale price.
Do they have a light for a garage?
I am guessing the answer is yes. Yes,
probably
they do.
Yeah.
Yes, they do. They have a light for anywhere. They have all sorts of lighting solutions. They have shades. Check it out. Go to idlewoodelectric.com.
I'm going to.
Mention WGN.
They have three locations, too.
Three locations. You were
one
listening.
One right by me in
exactly.
Barrington.
Exactly.
Nice.
So we'll play some ads for Idlewood each hour here on the WGN Radio
all
Theater.
Right. Well, good
and
luck with
I just
that fixture.
Really, I want to support them.
Am I going to get to see it at some point when it's up? You're going to invite me over?
If you bring a pie, I'll let you come over.
Yeah, you like fruit pies, right? Is that what
I
you
do.
Like? Yeah, she likes fruit pies.
Like a berry pie.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay.
I like a banana cream pie.
Oh, no.
Good banana cream
That's
pie.
That does not appeal to me.
No?
Get it?
Doesn't appeal?
He's a little slow.
Oh, wait. What happened? I didn't have... Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Say it again. Banana cream pie. It what? It doesn't what?
I'm not
appeal
gonna say
to Lisa.
It. I'm not gonna say it again.
There we go.
It only works once.
Much better.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right. By about the third hour, I can't remember if you're Lisa Wolf or if I'm Lisa Wolf.
Yeah, but this is only the second hour, so far
I'm
we're
pretty
good.
Pretty sure that I know that you are Lisa Wolf.
I think you just want to be me.
I do.
You
actually.
Just want my convertible Bentley. That's what you want.
Yeah, that
right?
would be nice.
Right.
She has a Maybach, a convertible Bentley, an R8, an Audi R8, and then you have a G-Wagon, a Mercedes G-Wagon.
Okay. Wait. R8.
Yeah, the
is
R8.
Is it automatic or a stick?
I don't drive stick.
It's automatic, but she drives it with the paddle shifter, so it's just
I
like
don't drive
you
stick.
Get the best of both worlds
yeah,
there.
Everything
that
has
way.
To be as easy as possible.
Oh, you're a wuss.
I know.
Come on.
Can't argue
Not
with that.
Not a stick?
I don't care for stick.
Yeah, but it's the best of both worlds if you have the automatic with the paddle shifters.
The V8 or the V12?
She's V8.
Or the V10, rather.
No, it's V8.
It's the V10.
No, yeah,
they don't make
eight.
A V8. They make
they
a V10
do.
And a V12.
No, the R8?
Oh, yeah. They do make a V8.
It's a V8 and a V10.
The V10, you're right. You're correct. You're correct, sir.
It's environmentally friendly, too. How many miles a gallon do you get?
Great.
At least three or more.
You know what? If there's any Audi dealers out there that want to have me drive an Audi R8 for them and talk about it on the radio every week.
You know what? I would do that with
come
any
on
car
down,
that
come
was
on
free.
Down.
You know, send the you go over. If it's free, I'll drive it.
You know, let me tell you, the Audi R8, that is my dream vehicle.
It's very fast, very powerful.
Does someone have a lead foot that they're not admitting to?
No, I do not. It's very
not at all, right, Lisa? Very lightweight. yeah. So she's got a whole fleet of cars, and then she has drivers too.
Mm, well, I don't know about that part. That might be a misnomer.
I have my Yugo, 1974 Yugo,
74,
and my horse and buggy.
Yeah.
But both are very reliable. They get me here every week.
I haven't missed a week yet. I would love to go in a horse and buggy.
Week yet.
If you had a Yugo, we wouldn't see you for a while.
That's true. In this rain outside, you'd never make it.
It was one of the worst cars ever made.
Oh, please, don't talk about my Yugo that way.
David, I had a Pacer, so that was my first car. So I've, moved up in the world.
My first car was a sort of pink-colored ex-post office Jeep.
Yeah. Oh, like a Pepto-Bismol color, right?
Yeah.
That's
nice.
Fun.
That was my first car.
That's fun.
No, it's not fun. It was
dare
awful.
Dare to be different.
That was the point. I didn't want to be different. That's called, hi there, let's see if you're speeding. Yeah, the pink car. Let's go for that one.
I like difference.
Well, that's good.
I know, because I am.
All right. In this hour, it's the Charlie McCarthy Show. And then in the second hour, or on last hour, it's the Lives of Harry Limahl, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. It's time for Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Maniac, which follows the fantasies of a man locked up in a mental institution. And the winner gets a $25 gift card for Lumel Nadies.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Ephraim, or do you say Ephraim?
Ephraim.
Ephraim? Ephraim Dvorily. Divaroli.
Why did you choose this clip Ephraim, out of all the
Ephraim
clips?
Ephraim Divaroli.
Oh, my gosh.
In War Dogs.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons and ammo. That's going to win this deal for us.
Ephraim Divaroli.
Listen, out of all the clips, this guy has been in a million movies the last couple of years, and I don't know why you chose this one.
I don't know. I like trying
you
to...
You like trying to say his name.
I'm Italian. I should be able to say Divaroli. Divaroli. Yeah, Divaroli.
Divaroli.
All right, if you know who that is, call us 312-981-7200. Win a pizza. We'll be right back.
Excellent. We are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
We're talking exclusive access to a stockpile of Soviet bloc non-standard weapons.
Ephraim Divaroli. Right?
No.
Ephraim.
Ephraim. There's no such name as Ephraim. John from Crystal Lake, we've got you on the line.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
Who's that actor that Carl cannot pronounce his character's name?
I would say the character.
What?
We lost you there.
The actor was Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill is absolutely right. And You are a winner, John. We are thrilled to give you a Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. You can order online at loumalnatis.com. Thank you so much. We hope you have a great pizza on us.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, John. Take care.
All right, it is time for the Charlie McCarthy Show. It's a comedy. Edgar Bergen, he became a ventriloquist at a very young age, Lisa. He had a carpenter actually create a dummy, the wisecracking Charlie McCarthy. And the duo became talent show headliners in Chicago while Bergen attended Northwestern University right here. And their radio debut was on the Rudy Valley Show in 1936. They were instant success. And were given their own radio show for the Chase and Sanborn Coffee Company, became one of the highest rated programs in history. And even knowing that Bergen provided the voice, listeners perceived Charlie as a genuine person. People listening really thought it was two different people, but it really wasn't. It was just Edgar Bergen doing the voice. And he also had two other dummies, the slow-witted Mortimer Snerd, and then the man-hungry spinster Effie Klinker. In 1941, Bergen married fashion model Frances Westerman, and 1 year later, the future actress Candace Bergen was born. In 1978, after 48 years in show business, Bergen sent his monocle, top-hatted partner, to the Smithsonian Institution. And I think it also, there might have been two Charlie McCarthy's, because there's one here right at the Broadcast Museum. Uh-huh. Right here in Chicago. So, very cool. All right, let's tune this in. Let's go back to September 26, 1943. Their guest is Hedy Lamarr, part one of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
The makers of Chase and Sanborn Coffee present Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy with William Gaxton, Victor Moore, Mortimer Snerd, Dale Evans, the sportsman, yours truly, Bill Goodwin, our special guest, Hedy Lamarr, star of the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer production Heavenly Body, and Ray Noble and his orchestra.
Ice cold Katie, won't you marry the soldier? Ice cold Katie, won't you do it today? Ice cold Katie, won't you marry the soldier? Soon he'll march away. Ice cold Katie, he's a dying to hold you. Keep that date, he came a hurrying for. Ice cold Katie, won't you marry the soldier? Soon he's off to war. Hear him ringing at your bell. Hurry before he's AWOL. Ice cold Katie, you're the talk of the town. Ice cold Katie, won't you marry the soldier? Melt, melt, melt on down.
Mr. Bergen.
Yes, Charlie.
Can I have a few words with you?
Well, I suppose so. What is it?
Well, we've been together a long time, haven't we?
Yes, we have, Charlie.
Yes, we have, yes. And we're not getting any younger, especially you.
Well, that applies to you too, Charlie.
Yes, it does, I know. I'm growing out of my youthhood, but I'm not as mature financially as I ought to be.
So it's money again?
Well, in a way, yes.
Well, my unfortunate friend, do you mean to say you have no money in your piggy bank?
Not a sou.
Not a sou. Well, how does that happen?
Well, my piggy bank went to market once too often.
Oh, I see. Well, it's a tragic story, Charlie. A tragic story.
Yes.
And it touches me deeply.
It do?
Yes.
Do it go as deep as your pocketbook?
No. No, it would, Charlie, if I hadn't heard the story so many times before.
Oh.
You are always financially embarrassed.
Yes, it's true.
How is that?
Well, I come from a long line of short people.
Oh, that's it. Well, I would give you more money, Charlie.
You would?
Yes, if I didn't think it was wrong and dangerous.
How can a little more money be dangerous?
Well, there might be germs on the money.
What?
Germs.
Germs on the money?
Yes.
Well, that's a new one, yeah. Germs on the money. That's pretty good. If that's the case, I must be the healthiest kid in town.
Charlie, you're always asking for more money, though.
But, Mr. Bergen, I'm not asking for more money.
Oh, you're not?
No.
Well, then what is it?
Well, I feel that a man in my position should have a checking account.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what is your position?
Well, I'm flat broke.
You're flat broke. A checking account on 75 cents a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what will you think of next?
I'll work out something.
Yes.
I was hoping I might get my allowance for, two or three months in a lump sum.
I see. In advance.
Yes. You know, it might teach me responsibility.
Oh, I see. Well, I think it would, yes.
Yeah?
Yes. I think maybe we can do that, Charlie.
Yeah?
Yes. This will be a noble experiment.
Oh, it sure will, yes. You mean you'll do it?
Well, I'll think about it. I'll open a checking account for you and put in $12.
You will?
Yes. Now, that's 4 months' allowance.
Yeah. How soon can I have it?
Well, I'll open your account Monday morning.
Yeah?
Yes.
Woo-wee! Monday afternoon, there's going to be a one-man run on that bank.
But remember, that money has to last you for 4 months.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Don't you worry, Bergen.
All right.
I'll prove to you I'm a good businessman.
Well, I hope so, Charlie. Then someday, why, you'll be a great help to me when I'm old and gray.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes. I won't do it. I won't do it. A smart crack now might cost me $12.
Yeah. Now, there are a few things I want to caution you about, Charlie. You must guard your checkbook.
Yes, sir.
And you mustn't overdraw your account.
Oh, no, sir. No. Well, there's one more thing, though.
What is it?
Is this bank good?
Oh, of course. I think it's good.
Yes.
Yes, I think they have a reserve of, I think it's around $3
million. $3
million? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, that ought to last me a little while. What are the chances of me hitting the jackpot?
No.
Say, Edgar.
Yeah,
Bill.
Yes, sir.
May I have a couple of words with you fellas?
Now, don't tell me that you need money, too.
No. Oh, no money. Just a few words.
Well, I don't know. Shall we give Mr. Gaxton a couple of words, Bill?
Edgar, I guess we can spare one or two short ones.
Sure.
Now, listen, fellas. Now, I'm going to direct a picture, and I'm trying to find a leading man.
Oh.
Do you know of anyone?
Probably
just the type you're looking for, Billy. But you see, I'm tied up at Patamount.
Much as that, yes. Gaxton, I know you want me, but Charlie doesn't allow me to appear in a picture without him. It's just one of those things.
Yes, well, neither one of you would do, you see. What I've got to find is a tall, handsome, debonair, smooth-looking young fella, a gorgeous hunk of man, a husky Tarzan who will out-Tarzan Tarzan.
Hello.
Well, there's your man, Billy. Right there. Victor Moore.
Oh, no. You'd never do.
No, Mr. Gaxton, I know there's a shortage of handsome actors, so I want to volunteer on account of the shortage.
My dear friend, there's a shortage, not a famine.
Now, don't be too hasty. My relatives tell me I have the features of Robert Taylor, the voice of Cary Grant, and the physique of Tyrone Power.
Too bad it all comes out Porky Pig.
Oh, I think I'm prettier than he is. But I'd like to get into Western pictures. Don't you think I'm the tough and rugged type that could bulldog a steer?
Well, you certainly got the face for it. Tell me, Mr. Moore, have you ever made a test for any of the studios?
Oh, sure. I made a test for a studio once, and they kept calling me for 3 days. But I never went near them.
Mm-hmm. Playing hard to get, huh?
No, I just didn't like what they were calling me.
Well, I'm going to give you a trial anyway. You see, the part I have in mind calls for you to stand on top of a hill and face the camera so everyone can see your big, beautiful brown eyes.
I got those from my mother.
Yes, you see. The women in the audience are spellbound and thrilled at your broad, manly shoulders.
Well, I got those from my father.
Yes. As you stand there smiling, we see your glittering, white, pearly teeth.
I got them from a friendly dented Travis.
Oh, Mr. Moore, let's face it. You see, you're not the romantic type. Now, look at your figure. You're so big around the middle, you don't even need a belt.
I know it. My pants establish a beachhead, and my stomach holds it.
Well, with that shape, why aren't you wearing a girdle?
My wife got up this morning and beat me to it.
Well, I tell you what I'm going to do, Mr. Moore. You might have hidden talents. By a strange coincidence, I have a scene from the picture right here. Now, we'll go over it together.
Me and you? Okie dokie.
Now, I tell you, it's a great story. You see, you will play the part of a strong, dashing hero, and I am a petite Russian princess.
You're a princess?
Yes, I'm a princess. I speak first, you see. You ready? Here we go. Oh, my little Bublitsky, look into my eyes and whisper those three little words that mean comfort, bliss, and contentment. You know those three little words, don't you, Boris?
Yes, scratch my back.
No. Let's come on now. Let's start again. Now, here we go. Come on. Boris, my sweetheart, I cannot stand it any longer. Let us run away together. What time, Boris, shall I be ready?
Sonia, my darling, first of all, I must go in the house and shave Mother.
No. That says you've got to go in the house and shave. Mother will be here at 6 o'clock. Go ahead. No. Read the speech here. Read it right.
Sonia, your cheeks are the color of rose petals.
Petals. Yes, petals.
Your lips are like wine. Your nose is continued on the next page.
You're reading the directions. I've never heard such a bad performance.
Well, why couldn't you change it into a Western picture? That's where I'd really show you some acting.
But I'm not casting a Western picture.
Bang, bang, bang. Give me me boots and saddle. Bang, bang, bang. You old villain, give me them there papers or I'll tear up the baby.
Hey,
bang,
wait, bang, bang. Hey, cut it out. Wait a minute now. Listen.
Stand back, you
dirty cattle rustlers. I'm Venomous Victor, the two gunmen.
Wait a minute. No, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. I say stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You hear me? Stop it. I don't want to hear another bang from you.
Bang.
I told you I didn't want to hear another bang.
Well, I had to empty the gun, didn't I?
Oh.
That's the first portion of the Charlie McCarthy Show from 1943. You heard Victor Moore right there. He was sort of a regular on the program. Just a few minutes, we'll meet Hedy Lamarr, and she has a crush, or I should say Charlie has a crush on Hedy Lamarr, right? Wait a minute. I think I said that wrong. It says Charlie teases Bergen about having a crush on guest Hedy Lamarr. Oh, that ought to be interesting, right? And when Edgar Bergen and Charlie were doing their little bit together, was Edgar moving his lips, Lisa?
Definitely not.
No?
Mm-mm.
Okay, good. All right, let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
That's me playing the fiddle right there, Lisa, underneath Bill Curtis.
You're a good fiddler.
Like that.
He's very talented.
Yeah. Isn't he? Multi-talented.
Especially musically inclined.
You're very musical.
Yeah.
And you
I can
give him a bag and he can hold a note.
I can play the kazoo.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can play the kazoo. I can play, what else? I don't know.
Did you call it a
triangle?
Kazoo?
I can play the triangle and the tambourine.
I believe tambourine. He called it a kazoo.
Mr. Tambourine Man?
Kazoo.
Kazoo, thank you.
And I can play the tambourine.
Tambourine
Mr.
Man.
Tambourine
he can play
man.
The comb, too.
The comb is a good one.
Yeah, that is a good instrument.
See?
It's excellent.
Not many people can do that.
How about a recorder? Can you play the recorder?
Sure, he pushes the button. It says play.
No, because they learn recorder in like third grade.
What's a recorder?
Seriously?
It's like a flute kind of thing.
It's a simple flute, though. You just there's only a few little holes on there.
Really?
No? Okay, never mind. It's a... No.
What did you say, Lisa? All right. There's one for a Nick's inappropriate. Okay.
But so, I was not being
right,
inappropriate.
Right. Lisa's Mrs. Innocent over here. She is very innocent.
Roger, you're not saying anything.
Very innocent.
She got quiet all of a sudden.
All right.
I'm having a good time with her.
So it's good to see you, Roger.
Thank you, guys.
See you.
How are you feeling? Okay? Feeling better?
We're dealing with it.
All right. Okay.
Well,
I'm glad to see you're back to work, and I love seeing you up there.
Good to be back, guys.
Yeah. Come back and say hi.
Will do.
It is 12:40 in the morning. Happy Sunday. We're listening to the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy Show. Special guest, Hedy Lamarr. Let's go back to 1943 now for the conclusion.
Evans comes forth with a very interesting invitation. Put your arms around me, honey. Hold me tight. Mr. Goodwin accepts, Miss Evans. Fellas.
I have two eyes, two lips, two arms, and I have you learn. Put your arms around me, honey, hold me tight. Huddle up and cuddle up with all your might. Oh, babe, won't you roll those eyes? Eyes that I just idolize. When they look at me, my heart begins to float. Then it starts a rocking like a motorboat. Oh, babe, I never knew any boy like you. Thank you. night.
Let's have a blackout.
You and me tonight.
Oh, oh, won't you roll your eyes?
Well,
oh, we know you'll tell those little lies.
Don't talk to me like that. I don't know what you mean.
Oh, yes, you do. We're on to you. We're not so green.
Oh, say I know I could be true to only one.
Only one?
Well, maybe two.
Only two?
Maybe three and maybe four if they were all.
In my arms, I just gotta get a girl in my arms.
Boy, are you bad. Yeah, you're feeling pretty chipper this evening, aren't you, Daggett?
Yes, yes. Yes, it's a lovely evening this evening. Lovely evening.
Yeah?
Yes.
What's the matter with you? Huh? What's that stuff you got on your coat there? What's that stuff there, you know?
It happens to be perfume.
No.
Eau de cologne.
Oh, is this so? Smells more like an afternoon in a glue factory. No.
It's all right.
Say, what are you? You're looking pretty sharp, aren't you?
Thank you.
What's going on, Bergen? What's up your sleeve? What's that?
Well, you know who our guest is this evening, don't you?
Yeah, Hedy Lamarr.
Well?
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 Are you kidding, Bergen? You and Hedy Lamarr?
Yeah.
Why don't you give up?
Well, I will. What's so unusual about me feeling a little romantic?
Romantic?
Yeah.
Oh, nothing. Only aren't you swinging after the ball went by?
Well, no. All right, I admit I'm not a college boy.
Boy, there's a concession.
Yeah. But there's no harm in trying to recapture my youth.
Capture your youth?
Yes.
First, you better try and recapture your middle age.
No. My dear boy, age is not everything. It's how you feel. That's what counts.
Yeah.
Yes.
How could you say that?
Yeah.
You who've been going steady with a hot water bottle.
Now, wait.
Oh, I can't keep this. Oh, Goodwin.
Yes, Charles.
How do you like Bergen? He thinks he's going to go and, you know, get someplace with Hedy Lamarr.
Oh, really? Oh, now, aren't you a little optimistic, Edgar? Well, confidentially, I thought maybe you boys would help me.
Help you with Lamarr?
Yes.
Are you mad?
Yes.
What are we, tin?
All right. I thought I might even go as far as make it worth your while financially.
Yeah. Oh, well, now, that's different. Tell us more, good-looking.
All right. I have always been on the side of truth and fair play.
Oh, no.
Unless there's something in it for me.
Yeah, that's right.
By the way, Edgar, how much is there in it?
Well, I'd planned on giving you 50 cents apiece.
Yeah. Oh, for goodness. Well, you'll get just what you pay for. And cheap is cheap, buddy.
All right.
Hello, Charlie.
Chickers, Bergen, here she comes.
Yes. Well, Hedy Lamarr.
Hello, Bill.
Hello, Charlie Wally.
Oh. Hello, Hedy Wally.
Charlie. Charlie, remember the 50 cents.
What? 50 cents?
The 50 cents, remember?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've made the dumbest deal in my life. Hedy, we've got a TL for you.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we have, Hedy. We know someone who likes you very much.
Oh.
He's just crazy about you.
Oh, that's wonderful. Tell me about him. What's he like?
Well, he... Here's where we go to work, Goodwin.
Yeah. Well, Hedy, this man we're talking about, Oh, you wouldn't believe it.
Now, stop teasing me, boys. Who is it? Is he unattached?
Unattached? Yes, he's practically falling apart.
I suppose he's dark and handsome.
Oh, certainly.
Watch it, good. Watch it.
Well, he's Handsome in the dark.
Yeah,
he's a real pin-up boy.
Yeah.
He sounds more like a bent pin-up boy.
No, not at all. He's a fine figure of a man.
Yeah, yes, he has a nice figure. Mm-hmm. Hey, if you care for avocados.
And what a body. A fine blend of quality, character, and deep down goodness. So
hey,
when it's coffee you're buying,
no.
Ask your grocer for Chase and Sanborn.
What is this? Hey, Goodwin, never mind the regular grind stuff. Let's get back to the drip, you know?
Charles, I'm dreadfully sorry. I was carried away.
Now, tell me more about this Superman. Is he the athletic type?
Athletic, is he? Well, once he swam the Mississippi River.
Oh, when was that?
The day they put in a toll bridge.
You know, I like a man of interesting moods. One who is quiet and conservative one moment and glamorous and dashing the next.
Well, he's a convertible model.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Slightly worn top.
Well, I hope he's well-read and a student of the classics.
Oh, yes.
Does he know Chaucer and Tennyson? Is he familiar with Lord Byron?
Is he familiar with Lord Byron? Only last night they had dinner together.
Oh, Charlie, he's dead.
No, he always looks that way. Oh, you mean Byron?
Yes.
Oh.
Oh, boys, it isn't fair to keep me in suspense any longer. You must let me meet him.
No sooner said than done. Oh, Bergen.
Here I am. Oh, hello. Hello, Miss LeVar.
Oh, so you're the one they were telling me about.
Yes, yes, I'm the boy.
Well, Miss LeVar, tell me, how do you feel about our client?
Oh, it's no use, fellas. But no one can say you didn't try.
No.
Really, I admire you boys for your loyalty.
Well, thank you, ma'am.
To think you do all that for a friend.
Yes, for a friend and 50 cents.
Oh, so that's it. You were doing it for money.
Well, I don't know.
Now, I'm disappointed in all of you.
Well, but after all, Hetty, we were just trying to...
What wouldn't I give to meet a man who was just himself? Frank, honest, and unassuming.
Hello, everybody. Oh, Hello, Miss LeVar.
Why, Mortimer, you know, I was just saying I'd like to meet a man who was down to earth.
Oh.
Someone who's really simple.
I guess I got what it takes, haven't I?
Mortimer, come over here.
No, I'm close enough. Mom.
No, you're not.
No,
come on over. I won't bite you.
I wish you would.
Now, don't be afraid of me, Mortimer.
No.
I only want to hold your hand.
No, no, you know, you could.
Now, please.
No, you know.
Pretty please?
No.
Please hold my hand.
No. I ain't gonna do it, that's all.
Why not?
Well, I'll hate myself in the morning.
Mortimer, what's the matter with you?
What do you mean?
How can you be so stupid?
I got a priority. Oh, that's it.
Something.
Mortimer, haven't you ever been out with a girl?
Well, sure. I had a date once.
Oh? Where did you go?
Well, sat on the front porch in a swing. Oh, boy, did we swing. Oh.
What else did you do?
Well, I looked at her. See?
Yes, you looked at her.
Yeah. You know what she did?
No.
She looked at me.
Oh, she looked at you, huh?
Yeah.
And then what?
Well, shucks, ain't that enough for one night? What?
Ladies and gentlemen, a word from Edgar Bergen.
It was my good fortune during the past year to visit and entertain our servicemen in Alaska, the Aleutians, and Newfoundland. I saw them in the far-off outposts where they were living in anything but comfortable surroundings. But despite their inconveniences, I found them eager and anxious to do their part to destroy the enemy that is trying so hard to destroy us. That means that our men are ready to give their lives if necessary. While here at home, we are asked to do very little more than to invest our money in war bonds. We are not asked to give anything, but just loan our own government the money it needs to provide our men with the equipment and supplies they require to win this war for us. Every person who possibly can should buy one or more additional bonds during this third war loan drive. Ladies and gentlemen, if our men are to reach Berlin and Tokyo, the least we can do is pay their fare with bonds. We cannot afford to fail.
When we all get together again next week, Charlie will meet up with an old pal and archenemy, Charles Lawton. Since Messrs. Lawton and McCarthy don't always see eye to eye, we're looking forward to a hectic and hilarious evening. That's next week at the usual time. Plus the two Charlies, of course, Edgar Bergen and Mortimer Snerd will be on hand, as well as Victor Moore, William Gaxton, Ray Noble and his orchestra, and one of the finest singing groups we've ever heard, the Pied Pipers. This week, when you're buying coffee, think of us and ask for Chase and Sanborn, coffee made to serve in times like these. This is Bill Goodwin saying goodnight from Hollywood's Radio City.
All over the country, old friends of Chase and Sanborn Coffee are saying, what did I tell you? As family after family changes to this finer, richer blend. Yes, in the past year, more people have been won over by Chase and Sanborn flavor than by any other coffee on the market. And that's only half the story. Besides this record-breaking popularity in private homes, Chase and Sanborn are the leading coffee roasters in the hotel and restaurant field. In other words, where coffee simply has to be good, Chase and Sanborn is first choice. These facts clearly indicate an opportunity for you. It's the opportunity to enjoy more flavor. Better, fresher, richer flavor in every cup of coffee you drink. Today's Chase and Sanborn is the richest, most flavorful, most delicious blend we've ever made in our entire 79-year history. Get some this week. Ask your grocer for Chase and Sanborn coffee.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the Charlie McCarthy Show, September 26, 1943, with special guest Hedy Lamarr. Also in the cast, Victor Moore. A great show. Bill Goodwin doing the announcing there, sponsored by Chase and Sanborn Coffee, is heard on NBC. Hope you enjoyed the Charlie McCarthy Show. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
I think I played the fiddle better this time. I was more in tune.
More in tune. Yeah, you were a little off last time.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, so it is 1:10. We're getting a little late start this hour, so let's get right into our trivia contest with Cat's Pride. We do have The Lives of Harry Lime with Orson Welles this hour. So, that's brought to you by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
This actor stars in the upcoming TV series Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, featuring the work of the science fiction author who inspired 1982's Blade Runner. And the winner gets a Twilight Zone 4-CD set. Produced
kind of appropriate for this trivia question, right?
I think so. Produced by Carl Amari, hosted by Stacey Keach.
Yeah, and Stacey's right down the
street
the street
at Goodman
here.
Theater.
Yeah.
Yep. Excited to see
gonna
him.
Going to play... who is he? He's playing the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Who is it again?
You have to keep thinking.
Oh, God. Hemingway.
Ernest Hemingway.
All right, very cool. We'll have Stacey on the show. All right, so they're going to win some Twilight Zone CDs, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor played Ned Fleming in Why Him?
I am going to take this octopus down.
All right, who is
that
actor?
That voice anyway.
312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
All right, we are back. This is the WGN Radio Theater. We're playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play it again.
I am going to take this octopus down.
And we have Andrea on the line from Naperville. Hey, Andrea.
Hi.
How are you?
Great.
Good. We're glad you called in, and I'm guessing you know who that actor is.
I do. It's Bryan Cranston.
Bryan Cranston is absolutely right. I was just ribbing Carr a little bit for not doing a Breaking Bad clip. But you are a winner. You knew it from that. I wouldn't have.
Andrea got it. She That's got all it. That matters. She got it. She got it.
You are a winner. You have won the Twilight Zone 4 CD set. It's terrific. Carl produced it, and Stacey Keach is the host in it. And there are so many wonderful actors that are involved in the Twilight Zone, not only from Chicago, but from L.A. and all over the country. So they're really fantastic.
Did 185 of those episodes with some of the greatest.
So fantastic.
Yeah, some of the greatest Hollywood celebrities, and then Stacey Keach is in every one of them. I hope you enjoy it, Andrea.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Thanks for calling. Thanks for winning. All right, it's time now. What, Lisa? What?
Nothing.
Did I do something wrong?
I need a little tally board. Every time I start talking and Carl interrupts me, Lisa's going to put a little mark on the chalkboard and we'll start counting.
I'm always doing something wrong.
No, you do everything right.
Oh, thank you.
You just like to talk a
lot. All right, it's time for the Lives of Harry Lime, Lisa. You know, there was a movie that came out in 1949 called The Third Man. It was a film by Graham Greene. It was a novel that he wrote called The Third Man. Terrific movie. Orson Welles starred in it. He played Harry Lime in the movie. And then he's sort of a con artist, you know. He was a con artist in the movie. And what happens is he is shot and killed in the sewer beneath Vienna in the original film. And then when he was living in London in 1951, a very famous syndicator named Harry Allen Towers approached him and said, "You know, let's do a radio show about The Third Man." He's like, "Well, I'm dead. I die in the movie. How are we going to do that?" He's like, "Let's do a prequel," and that's what it is. So they called it The Lives of Harry Lime. Was all before he was killed, and these are stories of Harry Lime before he met his demise. So I hope you enjoy this. Let's go back to a broadcast date of September 24th, 1951. This is called The Ticket to Tangiers. It stars Orson Welles. Here's The Lives of Harry Lime.
Presenting Orson Welles as The Third Man. The Lives of Harry Lime. The fabulous stories of the immortal character, originally created in the motion picture The Third Man, with zither music by Anton Karas.
That was the shot that killed Harry Lime. He died in a sewer beneath Vienna, as those of you know who saw the movie The Third Man. Yes, that was the end of Harry Lime. But it was not the beginning. Harry Lime had many lives, and I can recount all of them. How do I know? Very simple. Because my name is Harry Lime. I was down on my luck, way down, scraping the bottom. A couple of deals had fallen through, and I found myself in Paris with a lot of time on my hands and only the price of a beer in my pocket. I was spending my time and the money at Fouquet's, not because the beer is any cheaper at Fouquet's, but because, well, you meet a nicer class of people there, and besides, they let you read the newspapers free. So I was reading a newspaper, and I came on the advertisement. One of those classified ads in the personal column was addressed to Harry Lime. Harry Lime being me, I read on with some interest. There was no signature, no address. "Mr. Harry Lime," it said, "will find a business opportunity of an extremely profitable nature in the city of Tangier." Now, I might have thought this was one of the boys trying to hustle me out of Paris or just trying to be funny, except that the advertisement mentioned the city of Tangier. Now, why Tangier? There are very few places in the world I haven't been to, and Tangier just happened at the time to be one of them. Also, Tangier, as everybody knows, is full of money, and I I couldn't imagine anybody wanting to send me there, right in the heart of the free gold area, where every second address is a bank and every second person's an international operator just for a gag. Probably more chances in Tangier to grab a fast buck than you'll find in the world today. So I'm inclined to take the ad a little seriously. Of course, it might have been a police trap. There are cops in countries all over the globe busy looking for me. Some of them are just sharp enough to try to pull me in on a queer come-on like that. But the truth is that one of the only cities left where they don't happen to want me for what's known as questioning is the port of Tangier. That's what sold me. There's just one complication. My beer was finished, and with it, my financial resources. How to raise the price of the ticket?
And now, Orson Welles as Harry Lime, the third man, in today's story, Ticket to Tangier.
While I was brooding about how to raise the price of the ticket to Tangier, my eye happened to wander down the personal column of the newspaper, and a little below the advertisement addressed to me was this: Gentleman traveling to Tangier. A visit to the desk of the porter at the Lancaster Hotel on Rue de Berry will repay any businessman planning a visit to Tangier who could whistle a certain tune. Well, of course, that didn't have to be Harry Lime, but here's a song I'm fond of, one I've been whistling for years, and anybody who knew about me might know about that song. Anyway, what could I lose? I went over to the hotel and approached the concierge. Bonjour. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, monsieur. What can I do for you?
Well, I don't quite know that you can do anything. You happen to read the Paris edition of the Herald Tribune?
No, monsieur. I prefer to follow the news in my own language. But we have copies of the paper you mentioned for sale.
No, thanks. I've seen it.
Perhaps monsieur is calling for someone in the hotel, one of the guests. Whom shall I announce?
Harry Lime.
Perhaps I should have asked you first. Who it is you are coming to see.
Now that I couldn't tell you. Just tell me this. Do you like to whistle?
I am a lover of music, monsieur, but I do not whistle. No. As a young lad, however, in the orchestra of my school, I was considered quite proficient on the bassoon.
Well, try this on your bassoon.
Ah, yes, of course. I have something for you, Mr. Lime. Here.
Oh, thanks very much. Yes, it's addressed to me, all right, but that's all there is on the envelope, just my name. I wonder, would it be asking too much if I asked you to tell me who this is from?
Monsieur, it would be asking too much.
Oh, okay, old man. Thanks, anyway. I wish I could give you something for your trouble, but I forgot my wallet this morning.
That was anticipated, monsieur.
What do you mean?
Everything, monsieur, has been taken care of.
Everything?
Yes, monsieur, that is the word, I believe. Everything.
In the envelope was an airline ticket for Tangier, 50,000 francs in nice fresh notes, and the following letter. My dear Mr. Lime, when you arrive in Tangier, go immediately to the El Mirador Hotel, where a suite is reserved for you. After you've dined, go to a cabaret called the Kabbalah. Wait there for instructions.
Excuse me, monsieur.
Yes, porter. Is anything wrong?
Nothing is wrong, monsieur, but it is 2:45, and your plane leaves Orly at 3:15.
Oh, okay, old man, okay. I'm on my way. Just call me a cab, would you please?
No need for that, monsieur. A limousine has been ordered for you. It is waiting at the door.
It was a very pleasant trip with a very, very attractive hostess on board.
Are you quite comfortable, Mr. Lyon?
Oh, yes, I'm fine, thanks.
Isn't there anything you like?
Well, I'd like to know what you're doing tonight after we land.
I mean, wouldn't you like some more coffee or maybe a pillow?
I know what you mean, and you know what I meant.
Tangier is a very interesting city. First, there's the Arabs and the Kasbah and all that, and then there's the modern European city. It's an international port, of course, with 14 different countries in control, but of course you know that.
Yes, I've heard tell of it.
I guess you're making fun of me. You're a businessman. You've probably been to Tangier many times.
Well, let me take that up point by point. I'm not a businessman. I've never been to Tangier, and I wouldn't dream of making fun of you. Just answer me one question.
I go back on a return flight at 6 in the morning, Mr. Lime, and I'm sleeping.
You haven't answered the question. Besides, my name isn't Mr. Lime.
Oh, that's what it says on the manifest.
My name is Harry. Have you ever been to a nightclub in Tangier called the Kabbalah?
Why, yes, I have.
You have what?
Yes, I have had it.
It's a nice nightclub.
It's the best in town.
That's good. Glad you like it. I've reserved a table for us, okay?
Fasten your safety belt. We're coming in.
You know something?
What?
You're one of the few girls outside of Havana I ever danced with who knows anything at all about the Rumba.
I learned it in Havana.
That almost explains it.
What do you mean, almost?
Okay, you learned to dance in Havana, and so do lots of other people. Okay, you're a hostess on an airline. You're very good-looking, and there are lots of good-looking hostesses that dance the Rumba, but they don't dance that well. And none of them look this beautiful. No, I don't know what I mean by almost, but really, you know, you're almost too good to be true.
No, I'm not so good.
That's good.
You don't even know my name.
Yes, I do. I have a sign on the door of the cockpit, the plane, that says Captain T.R. Stevenson, co-pilot J. O'Brady, air hostess P. Smith. So that's your name, isn't it? P. Smith. May I call you P?
P is for Patsy.
Okay, we'll settle for that. Should we sit down? That champagne ought to be cold enough by now.
It's awfully close in here. Why don't we forget the champagne and take a walk outside?
Oh, wonderful. I'll just pay the check.
Don't bother. It's been taken care of.
What do you mean?
The check has been paid.
Now, look here, Olga, we can't have that. You're my guest, remember. Besides, I'm the male in the party, and I have my pride.
I'm sorry, Harry. It's all taken care of. Come on.
Good night, mademoiselle.
Good night.
Good night, monsieur.
Good night. Good night. Patsy, I'm going to take something back.
What's that, Harry?
One little word.
What's the word?
Almost.
I don't understand you.
Well, I used it describing you, but it doesn't fit. The word almost could never be applied to you. Whatever you are, that's what you are completely. You couldn't be almost anything.
You're wrong, Harry. Almost is just the word for me. Among other things, I'm almost very rich.
It must be if you treat all your boyfriends to champagne.
You're a special case.
We won't argue about that, Patsy. I'm a special case, but what's an airline hostess get paid? Enough to treat her boyfriends to champagne, even the special cases like me? No, no, Patsy, it doesn't make sense. You say you're rich.
I said I'm almost rich.
Well, then you must be almost stupid.
What do you mean?
Well, if I was almost rich, I wouldn't be working for my living at all. I wouldn't be found on an airplane unless I wanted to get someplace.
I said I was almost rich, Harry, and that's what I meant. That doesn't mean I've little money or enough money. It means I have to work for my living. I took this job to pay the rent and also because it brings me twice a week to Tangier.
What do you like about Tangier? A lot of international lawyers and private banks with streets full of American cars and grimy characters and nightshirts. Not very beautiful. As far as I can see, it's a kind of Switzerland with Arabs.
No, but it is beautiful, Harry, if you know the right places. Let me show you. Taxi! You know the Villa Mughetti?
The Villa Mughetti? Ah, yes, mademoiselle. Mademoiselle means the great palace on the hill. I know it well.
Good. Get in, Harry. I'm going to show you how beautiful Tangier can be.
Mm-hmm. The ticket to Tangier is Orson Welles in The Lives of Harry Lime from August 24th, 1951. We will get back to that in just a few minutes, but first these words.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolfe.
Now I'm playing the piano.
Yes, you are very musical.
See?
Very talented.
What do you think of that, Lise?
Multi-talented.
I was playing the
so impressive
kazoo earlier, and now I just played the piano underneath.
Not the recorder, though.
Yeah, not the recorder. We learned our lesson about the recorder.
I'm not talking anymore.
Yeah. Hey, that's a great idea. It's about the best idea you've come up with today, Lisa.
See how mean he is
no,
to me? See what I have to put up
total
with?
Total joking. You know that. You know this show would not be one-tenth as good without you.
That's true.
You know?
Yeah.
Right?
I know.
Right?
I know.
So I may not be able to do the show May 13th.
I've heard that. I know your daughter's graduating from college.
Yeah, she's
That's
graduating.
That's a good reason to take off.
I may have to take the night off, so.
Wait, can't you call it in?
No.
Give a phone call.
Yeah.
Lise can run the
I think Lisa and can handle it. I think you could do this.
I don't
really?
Want it. I don't want to do it alone. See,
why
that's
not?
The thing. It's not fun alone.
What?
What?
You can do it. I
could, but I don't want
I've
to.
I've been here, and when you're on, you know, on
and
your
you
many
hate it.
Vacations.
You hate it.
She's like a world traveler.
Yes, that's yeah. me. I'm the world traveler.
So we'll
it's,
see.
We'll talk.
Trying to figure this whole thing out.
Yeah, well, you know what? We'll talk to Stephanie and
I mean,
Todd.
My daughter only graduates from Purdue University one time.
That's right.
So I can't. Well, I'm not going to miss it. I mean, I got to go
no,
there.
Either way, you'll be there. The question is, how yeah. quickly do you have to come back?
Yeah, we'll see. I'll have to figure yeah. it out. But in the meantime, we're listening to The Lives of Harry Lime. This is the conclusion to The Ticket to Tangiers with Orson Welles.
The cab twisted and turned its torturous way through the native quarter, and then pretty soon we were out in the country. We were climbing steadily, I noticed, and passing beautiful villas, homes of rich expatriates who've come to live in this strange little international settlement of Tangier, where you don't even have to register with your consulate, and nobody pays any income taxes at all. I think I neglected to mention that Patsy was beautiful. And if I did, believe me, I was understating the situation. She had gray eyes and that clear, powdery gold hair that makes you think of the ashes of angel wings. I've known an awful lot of girls, but none of them I've ever laid eyes on would have given Patsy a worried moment. They may be better-looking airplane hostesses, but if there are, they're working for airlines on another planet. As we climbed up the moon-bright hills over Tangier, I forgot completely the strange business which had brought me there, the advertisement in the paper, the airline ticket, and all the rest of it. I didn't care why I'd been sent for to Tangier. I didn't care who'd done it or what he wanted from me.
I adore kissing you. You do it very well. But we've come to our destination.
Oh, so we have. Anyway, the cab stopped. When did that happen?
About 5 minutes ago.
Where are we?
Well, there's the bay below us.
Oh, very pretty it looks, too, with all the lights and moon on the water.
No, not now, Harry.
Please.
I'm very impatient. Now let's get out.
Why, it's nice in here.
It's nicer in the house.
And that enormous place?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, some kind of private mansion it must be. I'm sure we'll be welcome.
Here, you take the key.
The key? You mean...
That's what I mean. You're my guest.
Yes, but how?
You've been my guest all along. Gentlemen traveling to Tangier, a visit to the desk.
But what do you mean?
You whistled a tune, didn't you?
Well, how do you know about it?
I had a friend once who told me how fond you've always been of
no,
that music.
No, I mean, how do you know about the ad in the paper?
I ought to know. I paid for it.
And my plane ticket.
I got a reduction from the airline. Come in, Harry. Here's a flashlight. I've got something to show you.
Followed Patsy into the house. It was a huge place, full of heavy chandeliers and pompous furniture, most of which are pretty spooky looking because they're covered with dust cloths. Obviously, the place hadn't been lived in for many months, but who was it who had lived here? Who was it that built this unlikely palace on a hill overlooking the harbor of Tangier? Above all, why had I been brought here? Just who was P. Smith, air hostess?
Betty, the explanation is so banal. To the door. You left it open. Now then, where's the hairway?
Just a minute.
Yes, Mr. Lyme?
You seem to know my name, monsieur, but I'm afraid you have the advantage.
It doesn't matter. I was, shall we say, a business associate of this widow's lady's husband.
Okay, don't tell me. Let me guess. You began in Indochina. You served 3 years in a penal colony in Brazil. They used to call you the doctor, am I right?
I have a doctor's degree.
Dr. Bessie, that's your name.
What a detective you would make, Mr. Lyme.
I have a good memory, Dr. Bessie, and I'm a professional collector of information. You will find the heroine in the piano.
In the piano?
No.
This is probably a trick, Mr. Lyme. Suppose you go to the piano and extract the heroin yourself.
Don't be silly, old man. It would be very simple for me to extract a revolver from the piano. I think it would be unpleasant for both of us if there was any shooting. There must be police in the neighborhood. I'd much prefer you to find your dope and leave quietly. I'm a peace-loving man.
Very well. I'll look for myself. I'm keeping my eye on you, Lyon. Now then. Wait a minute. There is nothing here. What have you...
Put up your hands, Bessie. I'm warning you. I'll shoot if you don't.
What, you dear...
Well, well, very quick, I must say. Congratulations. Strange. He said he was a good shot. Must have been boasting.
Should have kept his eyes on both of us, and nobody could do that. Is he dead?
I wouldn't know, Mrs. Mugetti. I haven't asked him. He looks that way. Have you any plans?
Yes, we'd better get out of here.
Now, isn't that funny? That's just what I was going to suggest.
Take the heroin. You can carry it just as it is in the rug.
No, thanks. I have a bad back, and I hate to stoop over. Why don't we just leave it where it is?
Let the cops find it and give up $100,000 worth of dough? You crazy?
Not crazy enough to argue with you as long as you're holding that gun, Patsy, but...
What's that?
Well, what do you think?
Maybe it's the police.
Either that or it's New Year's Eve. Douse the lights, honey.
Right.
Okay, and now? That's much better.
Why, you...
We've got darkness and I've got the gun.
Give it back to me.
You're too impulsive for firearms, Mrs. Mugetti. I'm keeping the gun.
The cops!
Sure,
they're
the
here.
Cops. Your husband built a nice big house, but it's getting a bit overcrowded. If you don't mind the suggestion, I think we better scram just 2 feet ahead of me, Mrs. Mugetti, and don't try anything funny.
You
dirty... Keep your seatbelt fastened. We're coming in. We made our way out through the garden. The cops were all over the place, and after a while it was clear that our only hope was in separating. Patsy! Patsy, you go through the shrubbery. Keep straight on down the field till you get to town. You can, miss it. Just keep going down the road.
What about you?
I'll make out all right.
Yes, but what about the heroine?
Heroine? There isn't any heroine in this story, Mrs. Mugetti. Just a hero. That's a joke, honey. You can laugh at it later when you catch your plane to Dakar. They got her. They took her off the plane on the return run to Paris. Somebody tipped off the police about that murder. It's what you might call the wages of lying. It's another joke, but you don't have to laugh at it. I'll do the laughing. You see, what Patsy didn't know was that I had picked up the rug in the darkness and hid it under a bush just outside the window. I came back later and collected it. Of course, the word was out about Rico's big consignment and didn't have any trouble getting a good price in Marseille the next week. But honestly, I don't approve of drugs. That's why I threw the original stuff into the Bay of Tangier and delivered to the gangsters 7 nicely wrapped packages of confectioner's sugar. They tell me you can get the habit for sugar, too, but my conscience is clear, all except for one thing, that little prayer rug it was wrapped in. I know it didn't belong to me, but it looks very nice here in front of the tea table, don't you think so? Will you have milk or lemon with your tea? And how much sugar? This is the very best brand, you know. A syndicate of desperate gangsters paid me $50,000 for only 7 packages of the same quality.
And that is The Lives of Harry Lime from September 24th, 1951, The Ticket to Tangiers, starring Orson Welles. That was broadcast... out of the BBC. He was living in London at the time in 1951. And he did this show and he did another show. Do you know what that other show is?
The Fat Man.
No.
Oh.
No, not The Fat Man. No, The Black Museum.
Oh, okay.
That was the other one.
I was very
the
close.
Black Museum.
I was very close.
What are you saying? Orson Welles was fat? Oh, no, not at all. Maybe when he was doing those, what was it? Dave would know. Palmasalm or something like that, was it? What was the name of those?
Palmasalm? We would sell no wine before it's time.
Yeah, Palmasalm.
Was it Palmasalm?
I think it was Palmasalm. I might be wrong, though. Was it Palmasalm?
It is.
Sounds
that would be like a big jug of wine, I think, right? I mean, like on the bottom shelf for like $5.
No
for $5.
Yeah.
Before it's time.
Yeah.
It was very dramatic in those commercials.
Yeah. That's all that was left. That was the 70s, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you remember when he used to be on Johnny Carson and do magic?
Yes. Yeah.
And he would do crazy good magic.
Yeah,
Orson Welles.
Like end of his life kind of thing. Yeah. That was like his last days. That's what he did. Like Jimmy Stewart would come and do poems. He would come and do magic, right?
Exactly. Exactly. Huh. All right, well, we'll talk with Dave Plyer in just a few minutes. But first, these words.